back. You're at UBC and you're listening to AstroTalk with Marco and Adina Howard on CITR 101.9. Hi, welcome. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9, and welcome. So, what's new in astronomy? Something new every day. And I saw a story about the Parker Solar Probe. So, I'm looking what is the latest on the Parker Solar Probe. And maybe the surprising thing is that I thought we had we knew nearly everything we wanted to know about the sun. So what's the use of the Parker Solar Probe? Well, the Parker Solar Probe will swoop to within 4 million miles of the sun's surface, facing heat and radiation like no spacecraft before it. Launching in 2018, Parker Solar Probe will provide new data on solar activity and make critical contributions to our ability to forecast major space weather events that impact life on Earth. So I saw a story on the news about the Parker Solar Probe. So I thought something new was going to be brought up about it. And you know what? All they did was look at the Parker Solar Probe. They didn't find anything new. There was no groundbreaking finds. And so let's just read a bit about the Parker Solar Probe. In order to unlock the mysteries of the corona, but also to protect a society that is increasingly dependent on technology from the threats of space weather, we will send Parker Solar Probe to touch the sun. So I believe it's shielded by a big piece of carbon to the heat, and it's interesting how they do these things. Some of the spacecraft out there, some of the telescopes or the observatories, they're shielded, and I think the telescopes are kept cool because they have to be kept cool. They're infrared telescopes, so any heat signature from anything will give a misguided signal or will interfere with the signal. So anything from the computer on board or some other thing in outer space, they will interfere with the data. So they have to shield the telescope and keep it like close to absolute zero or something like 5 degrees or I'm not sure, 10 degrees. So the Parker Solar Probe also has a big, I think, 2 meter or something like that. Someone's going to pick me apart now because I'm not sure how thick it is, but to shield it from the sun. So it's going closer and closer, and it's going to reveal things that I thought we knew nearly everything about the sun, but it seems we don't. The mission was named for Eugene Parker, the S. Chandrasekhar Distinguished Service Professor Emeritus, Department of Astronomy and Astrophysics at University of Chicago. In the 50s, Parker proposed a number of concepts about how stars, including our sun, give off energy. He called this cascade of energy the solar wind. So that's what the Parker probe is going to. But I thought we knew a lot about the solar wind, and it seems we don't know enough. And Parker described an entire complex system of plasma, magnetic fields, and energetic particles that make up this phenomena. Parker also theorized an explanation for the superheated solar atmosphere, the corona, which is, contrary to what was expected by physics laws, hotter than the surface of the sun itself. This is the first NASA mission that has been named for a living individual. So, the mission objectives of the Parker Solar Probe measures from within the region where all the action happens. On the final three orbits, Parker will fly to within 9 solar radii of the sun's surface, and are about 3.83 million miles close. That is about 7 times closer than the current record holder for a close solar pass, the Helios spacecraft. At its closest approach, Parker will be hurtling around the sun at approximately 430,000 miles per hour. Wow, that's enough to get from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. in 1 second. That is fast. I never knew spacecraft could go that fast. One thing that I have always thought about is, okay, we're trying to get, like, the Parker Solar Probe is going 430. How come it doesn't spin out of control or smash apart with all that speed? How can a craft be engineered so it doesn't, when it goes so fast, just doesn't start to blow apart or fly apart or wobble or anything? So it's quite good engineering, amazing engineering. At the closest approach to the sun, while the front of Parker Solar Probe shield faces temperatures approaching 1400 degrees Celsius, the spacecraft payload will be near room temperature. So that's another thing. This is really, I've heard it said that this is a golden age of astronomy. And you know what? It does seem to be. So I was looking for a special story on the news, and there's no special story. So I wonder why the newscasts broadcast this, because, okay, so it's going to go by Venus 7 times, gravity assist by Venus. It's, it says here the Parker Solar Probe is likely to generate more questions than it answers. So I was mistaken, as I said, I'm going to repeat it. I thought that the sun was quite a well-known star. And you know what? It is, there's still some mystery there. Okay, so here it shows a picture. If you want to go to this, it's a wonderful page. It's called, parkersolarprobe.jhuapl.edu/themission. So maybe you can Google it, but it's a very good website. It's NASA's Parker Solar Probe website, and it shows the 7 orbits it makes around Venus, the flyby. So, wow, I never knew it would. So what it shows here is it goes once around the Earth, 7 times around Venus, and then it also probably gets a gravity assist from Mercury. So it's quite fascinating. 7 orbits. Why would it go all the way back out to Venus? But if it's going 430,000 miles per hour, so you can get from Washington, D.C. to Philadelphia in about, it says here, 1 second. And from Washington, D.C., I took the train there once before, from Washington, D.C. to New York. I think it's roughly about 240 miles. So if that takes 2 seconds for 240 miles, then from here to New York, let's say it's about 5,000 miles. So it would take about 20 seconds to fly from here to New York, which is kind of fast, isn't that? So the Parker Solar Probe is moving, and it has its science objectives, which basically is to learn more about the sun. So it launched on August 12, 2018, and I guess I've heard about it, but now I'm really much more fascinated on it. So it shows the picture here. The trajectory design, Parker Solar Probe will use 7 Venus flybys over nearly 7 years to gradually sink its orbit around the sun, coming as close as 3.83 million miles. So we're about 100 million miles from the sun. So that's about 1/25th of our distance from Earth to sun, well within the orbit of Mercury and about 7 times closer than any spacecraft has come before. Parker Solar Probe is a true mission of exploration. For example, the spacecraft will go close enough to the sun to watch the solar wind speed up from subsonic to supersonic, and it will fly through the birthplace of the highest energy solar particles. Still, as with any great mission of discovery, Parker Solar Probe is likely to generate more questions than answers. Wow, it's going very fast. So let's see. No, I don't want to figure it out. This, okay, so it's going 430,000 miles an hour. So that's about, or a second, 430,000 miles a second, which is really fast. No, 430,000 miles an hour, sorry. So in 2 hours, it would go 1 million miles. So to get from here to the sun, it would take, if it maintained that speed, it would take about 16 hours, pretty quick. Okay, 430,000 miles an hour. And that's 125 miles per second. So you can get from the U.S. border. Yeah, I was right. So from Washington to New York is about 240, and Philadelphia is somewhere in the middle, so it's 125. So I used 250 from Washington, D.C. to New York. And so 125 miles per second. So if you were at the U.S. border, you could fly from the U.S. border to Seattle in a second, which is pretty quick, I think. Okay, so there's another NASA Great Observatory. I'm not sure how they call it observatory. What is an observatory or what is a telescope? But anyway, so let's go over this year. So 2019, January 19, 2019, it was at Aphelion 1, whatever that means. January 20, 2019, second orbit begins. April 4th, perihelion number 2. And I know what these mean, but if I try to think about it, I'll probably ruin it, so I won't say anything. September 1st, it was at perihelion number 3. And December 26, 2019, it will have another Venus flyby number 2. So it will keep doing this. 2021, the same kind of thing. Fly back and forth between close to the sun and Venus, and does that on 2021, 2022, 2023. It's showing here. So it's going to be up there quite a bit for quite a long time. And it's 2025, I think it will be its last orbit. So it's the Parker Solar Probe mission team. Looks like Johns Hopkins University is in charge of this. And I'm so envious because the U.S. universities get to work with all these wonderful missions. So there we have it, the Parker Solar Probe. I thought it was going to say something groundbreaking because, of course, I said it was on the news, and it did not seem to have any headline story. But here's an article. I'll read this. Something came up, a big disable ad blocker. What's happening here? It's making my life miserable here. Some kind of ad or ad blocker came up. And you know what? I'm going to have to close this page because it is giving me fits. And let's see if I open it again, what it'll do. Will it give me fits again? Okay. Here it is. It's from space.com. And it said, the first sun details from NASA's Parker Solar Probe are out, and they're hot. So that was 20 days ago, which is November something. So November like 15 or 16. Want to see the sun in a whole new way? So again, this article is called The First Sun Details from NASA's Parker Solar Probe are out, and they're hot. And it's on space.com 20 days ago by Megan Bartels. Again, it says, want to see the sun in a whole new way? Now you can do just that by looking through a host of science data newly made available to the public. That information was gathered by NASA's Parker Solar Probe during its first two close passes of the sun. The flybys brought the spacecraft closer to the sun than any previous vehicle had gone, offering scientists an incredible opportunity to learn more about our star. Parker Solar, Noor E. Raoufi, Parker Solar Probe project scientist at Johns Hopkins, and quote, Parker Solar Probe is crossing new frontiers of space exploration, giving us so much more new information about the Sun. Releasing this data to the public will allow them not only to contribute to the success of the mission, along with the scientific community, but also to raise the opportunity for new discoveries to the next level, end quote. It's nice, those general statements, but sometimes details are nice. So Parker Solar Probe launched in August 2018 for a 7-year mission that is targeting the constant stream of highly charged plasma leaving the Sun, called the solar wind, and the star's outer atmosphere called the corona. Studying these phenomena requires getting incredibly close to the Sun. The spacecraft primarily gathers data while within about 23 million miles or 37 million kilometers of our star. On board are 4 science experiments: the field experiment, studying electric and magnetic fields; the integrated science investigation, which measures high energy charged particles in the solar wind and corona; the wide field imager for Solar Probe, which images the solar wind and other structures; and solar wind electrons, alphas, and proton investigation, which measures different types of particles in the solar wind. So again, if you're an astronomer or just a hack like me, just interested in astronomy, this is a great time. There's so many cool things that NASA are doing, especially, you know, Mars, going to the Sun. 2 of the spacecraft, the Voyagers, are outside of our solar system, still doing scientific discovery, and all kinds of missions are going to be launched. And of course, we're looking forward to the James Webb Space Telescope, whenever that's going to launch, and then hopefully one day Mars. So I can't wait what's going to be like 50 years in the future. So that was the Parker Solar Probe, one of the great missions of NASA, and it just doesn't seem to quit with NASA. They keep bringing up these brand new missions, and I didn't even know about, I guess I heard about it, but it was so cool to read about it. Okay, so thank you for listening. I am going to go for a break now, and when I come back, we're going to do more cool astronomy, because you know what? Astronomy is cool. It's fun. Okay. I'll be back in a second after some Kelly Rowland and Nelly. This is Marco, and you're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 with Nelly and Kelly Rowland. Everything, the St. Louis thing with Nelly on CITR 101.9's AstroTalk. What's it gonna be? She said, you don't know what you mean to me.
Even when I'm with my boo, you know you're not. You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra Siam, Nisiam, Nisiaya, Anthasiakuya, Talit, Sin, Homasque, Mustail.
When me touch down, bed I broke down, in a late night, me and a lockdown. She found joints to the side, I had a shotgun. I'm a dark glass, cut off shots, clocks well clean. Touch you road with me blood clot team. See a girl up on a corner, I cry and I scream. You know, said the boss, I feel intervene. She say, her man not give her the time. So of course, I know, said, me go give her the wine. Now she say, oh me, is a one of a kind. And that's so she became mine. And
see, you're listening to Astra Talk on CITR 101.9 with Marco. I
take him, girl, away from me, Mokar. Can't believe I take him, girl, away from me, Mokado.
She want a rich nigga, not a broke one. She a boss too, she get her own money. Slim dicky with a booty, yeah, she know a nigga love that shit. I love that shit. She got a man, no, well, I'm like, so what? What that nigga got to do with us when we lost in the moment? And I'm deep in your ocean. I bet he can't believe that.
Talk about the hood from New York that give her the sparks. And I'm a straight jeans pants, I'm a wallaby clocks. The boy say, oh, me not in a in class. Show him, I give her all of the money in the world. Never know, say, him would I lose him, girl, to a regular youth. Boy, I give her the time, and plus she say me well cute. And see that, him can't believe I, can't believe I. Take him, girl, away from me, my God. Can't believe I. Can't believe I take him, girl, away from me, my God.
Hey, girl, come give me a little wine, so. Give me a little wine, so. Give me wine, so. Give me wine, so. Give me wine, so. My girl, come give me a little wine, so. Give me a little wine, so. Give me wine, so. Show me love, girl, free your mind. Give me a little wine and I'ma make you mine, yeah. I know you didn't come alone, that's why you really shy. Baby girl, come free your mind. Many love to give, I wanna hold you tight. Baby girl, I hold you tight. I wanna squeeze, wanna tease, wanna please, baby girl, I wanna.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosions!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Send me wine up the ting till it pile up. Big bumper girl just a wine and a oil up. They must spoil me a stock till it pile up. My money no, so it my
you
money
dance like you mean it. Dance like you on fire and you want me to know. You move like you mean it, shawty. See the look on your face. You either wanna fight or wanna make love, maybe both. Got me looking at you, watching the way you wind it and pop it. One more time, go wind and pop it, yeah, yeah. Remember that drink
got me feeling alright. Pretty little thing, I could watch it all night. Pull up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Pull up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Baby, push back when I jump behind it. When I jump behind it. So when I jump behind it, push back on me. So baby, push back when I jump behind it. Baby, let me know you like it. Tonight, let's give them something to see. Everybody's singing.
You're listening to Mayo on CITR 101.9 on Marco's Astrotalk. Push back.
So don't want you to mean it, yeah. You got me on fire, baby, I smell the smoke. Come on, let me bite a waist, love me real hard. Me crazy, take me to the bar, couple shots, no chasing. My booty amazing, come on, baby, chase it. Back to the floor, give us space and looking at me, watching the way I wanted him pop it. One more time, I wanted him pop it, yeah. Baby, that drink got me feeling alright. Pretty little thing, you could watch me all night. Pull up on this bomba, boy, I don't mind. Pull up on this bomba, boy, I don't mind.
Baby, push back when I jump behind it. When I jump behind it. So when I jump behind it, push back on me. So baby, push back when I jump behind it. Baby, let me know you like it. Tonight, let's give them something to see. Everybody singing.
Hello. I'm back. I can listen to that all day, especially now he's singing. Stephane Dawn is one of my best artists now. I just love her. She's great. Okay, so we're going to talk more about astronomy. And guess what? I was messing around with a console here. And guess what I found? Something about Parker Solar Probe. Okay, so it's dated a day ago, yesterday, and it says Solar Probe finds active mysterious corona, surprising scientists. So it's on livescience.com, dated one day ago by Rafi Letzer. And again, the title of the article is Solar Probe Finds Active Mysterious Corona, Surprising Scientists. NASA's solar probe has passed through the outer atmosphere of the sun, and now we get to see what it found. The first mission to the sun has reached the star's corona or other atmosphere, where its temperature soared to a few million degrees. There, the probe found rogue ripples. A rogue ripple, wow. Disrupting parts of that atmosphere, a discovery that could help solve a long-standing mystery about this hot ball of gas. The probe's discoveries could also help astronomers predict when our home star will lash our planet with fiery jets of plasma, triggering powerful magnetic storms and causing massive mass blackouts. NASA's Parker Solar Probe, which is NASA's Parker Solar Probe, which is about the size of a large car, launched August 12, 2018. It has since completed two full orbits of the sun, zipping within 15 million miles, 24 million kilometers of the solar surface, and passing through the corona, the source of the solar wind that can strike Earth. The spacecraft will shift much closer to the sun during future orbits, but already its findings have changed how astronomers see our home star. So quite amazing that I'm going to read an article soon. And there it goes. NASA spots crash site and debris from India's lost moon lander. So what happens is on these missions, they're not easy. And I think Israel lost some kind of thing on the moon. And the European Space Agency, when it went to meet its an asteroid or is a comet, C67. I don't remember I don't want to mangle it. So Gurensko or something, Gurensko, C67. Let's just call it that. It didn't work. It didn't last very long. So it malfunctioned. And then I think they have spotted a ESA lander on the moon, which crashed or something went wrong. So there's a lot of things that can go wrong. So NASA's doing amazing stuff. Like my favorite missions is the Voyager missions. And they're way out. They're outside of the solar system. They're so far away, it takes days or maybe days for their signal to reach Earth. They're so faint and they can still do it. Imagine how these spacecraft have lasted like 44 years or something, 42 years. And they're still going, so very far. So all these NASA missions are amazing. So here we got a Parker Solar Probe going to the moon. It's getting in the atmosphere, and it's telling us some new things. So let's see what it's telling us, all our people that are interested in such kind of things. Oh, my mouse wouldn't work, and all of a sudden I kept clicking, and all of a sudden it, bang, clicked about 10 times. Okay, so let's see. So says Justin Casper, a researcher at the University of Michigan, quote, even with just these first orbits, we've been shocked by how different the corona is when observed up close. These observations will fundamentally change our understanding of the sun and the solar wind and our ability to forecast space weather events, end quote. Published as a series of four papers in the journal Nature on Wednesday, December 4th, these observations painted a picture of a corona that is both more active and more mysterious than it appeared based on observations from Earth. So again, I guess I was, misguided. Is that a good word? I thought astronomers knew everything there was to know about the sun. But now this Parker Solar Probe mission is just discovering such amazing stuff. And of course, it's practical because if we get hit with a solar storm and they could somehow mitigate it, be worth it, wouldn't it? For example, the probe found that researchers were wrong about how the sun aims its blasts of solar wind into space. Scientists knew that the sun's magnetic field tugged on winds as they made their way out of the corona, but the probe found that the effect to be 10 to 20 times more powerful than scientists had thought. So let's stop there. It says, scientists knew the sun's magnetic field tugs on wind as they made their way out of the corona. So how does it tug? Does it tug them back in or push them back out? So now they found that this tugging effect of the magnetic field on the solar wind is 10 to 20 times more powerful than they thought before. That means researchers will need to completely rewrite calculation used to predict space weather. So says Casper again, in quote, this has huge implications. Space weather forecasting will need to count for these flows if we are going to be able to predict whether a coronal mass ejection will strike Earth or astronauts heading to the moon or Mars, end quote. The probe also turned up new clues that could help resolve an old mystery. Why does the corona get hotter the farther you are from the sun's surface? Some researchers have suspected that magnetic Elfven wave oscillations long ago discovered in the solar wind might play a role. The Parker Solar Probe detected those waves behaving in a strange and unexpected way in the neighborhood closer to the sun. So says Casper again, in quote, when you get closer to the sun, you start seeing these rogue Elfin waves that have four times energy than the regular waves around them. They feature 300,000 miles per hour velocity spikes that are so strong, they actually flip the direction of the magnetic field. So this is interesting stuff. They are discovering, which I think that I thought everything was known about everything, and I guess I was wrong. So here's a nice little box below this story. It says, the three-body problem has perplexed astronomers since Newton formulated. AI just cracked it under a second. So that's if you have many body. So like the many body problem, how do they interact? Like you can get two bodies and you can say, okay, this is the gravitational field between them and blah, blah, blah. But what if you have many bodies? So anyway, so that was cool that I found something about the Parker Solar Probe. Okay, now here it goes to that story I briefly touched on. It was how the NASA spacecraft do such good work and what's their success record and not just success record. For example, there's, I forget what the exact name is, but one of the landers on Mars was supposed to last for maybe a few months, and it's been going strong for years now. So it's quite amazing how these are built, and lots of NASA missions are extended and extended and extended, and they just do amazing science. So thanks to NASA. Kudos to NASA and all the great people that work there. So again, earlier I talked about NASA spots crash site and debris from India's lost moon lander. So this is 2 days ago. It shows the impact site on a map. So again, this is on space.com or livescience.com. And the title is NASA Spots Crash Site and Debris from India's Lost Moon Lander by Megan Bartels. And it has a nice pic here, and it says, NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter spotted debris marked in green and soil disturbance marked in blue caused by the hard impact of India's Chandrayaan-2 spacecraft on December 6, 2019. Scientists and amateurs alike have spent months combing through images from NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter looking for the remains of India's moon lander, and that search has paid off. Yesterday, December 2nd, the team that runs the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter camera, LROC, released images taken November 11th that show how the spacecraft has changed the surface of the moon. Imaging experts have spotted extensive evidence of the crash, including both debris from the craft and places where the collision seems to have stirred up the moon's regolith. So I was thinking about this yesterday, about acceleration due to gravity. So the acceleration due to gravity on the surface of the Earth is about 9.8 meters per second squared. So each second something falling to Earth goes 9.8 meters per second faster. And I believe on the moon it's 1/6. So it's 1/6 of 9.8, which is about 1.6. So 1.6 meters per second squared. So I wonder how that affects how hard things impact on the moon. And I think it does. It should. Because if something is not going as fast on the moon, when it's crashing into it, it's not going to have the same devastating impact. Back to the article. Now that last part has changed. The NASA spacecraft first pass over the impact site occurred on September 17th, and the LROC team published the resulting image later that month, even though they didn't think they had found any sign of the crash. But in that image, someone named Shanmuga Sabramanian spotted one extraordinarily bright pixel and reached out to the LROC team, according to a NASA statement released yesterday. That tip-off, plus better images, gave the specialists the detail they needed to map the full scope of the surface changes caused by the hard landing. So it shows it here. You can clearly see it now. Newly released images show the impact crater itself, dark ejecta rays, and light lines marking the debris field. Okay, so as I said, the reason I read this is launching things way out in outer space is not an easy thing. And I guess NASA has made it seem easy. They are doing great stuff with a lot of their missions. And the ESA has lots of great missions too. But how NASA consistently does these things, which is so cool. So I'm going to take a break. And when we come back, let's talk more astronomy. So this is Marco. You are listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
This is going out to the whole wide west side. Know what I'm saying? Yeah. Break it down for me. Steady mopping, rock, rock on. I was just a young boy living in the hub city,
Eastside Compton. Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had every talking about boy you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC.
Too short, bumped in every super's boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast.
My music and hit me where you at, throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. Going on and on and don't stop, we won't stop.
That's why I put it down for the west side.
It wasn't that long ago.
Oh, no.
We were still in 40s out the liquor store.
Oh, no.
Mama started tripping, so it's time to go.
Out to the park with the locusts.
Everybody broke, smoking roaches.
DJ Quick was the had every claiming he was from the CPT.
Y'all remember?
One time tried to clown. We had to burn this bitch on down.
One time for my was in the car.
Place a dime with you, but having lots of patience.
Dimes for my sisters at the county field.
I got some west side love for all you ghetto children.
Three times for my sister that passed away.
I took some food for you and pray for better days.
One day everything's gonna be fine. But until that day, my only reply is west side till I
my
die.
Like you just don't care.
From LA to the Bay, what you say?
All day, every day.
Any damn day.
Take a look around.
We got the whole world locked down, going on and on.
Let's do some quick yes or no questions. Are the following things technically possible? Life on other planets, is that theoretically possible?
Yes.
Okay. What about a Schwarzschild wormhole?
Yes.
Okay. What about this? Me going on a date with Charlize Theron? Not at all. In no universe.
No.
In none of the infinite universes does that happen.
No.
It's completely beyond the bounds of scientific possibility, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Quick follow-up question. In any of those potential universes, am I the one rejecting her and that's why it doesn't work out?
No. You realize that typing your response is difficult for me, correct?
Okay, sure, yeah, it's just I'm trying to play this out because I'm just trying to see if there was any hypothetical hope.
No.
It doesn't matter. But never say never. Okay, if time travel were possible, would you want to go back in time and refuse to do this interview?
Yes.
You truly are an incredibly smart man. Stephen Hawking, thank you so much for your time.
No problem, no problem.
No problem, no problem.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Rhymes. Baby, girl, there's something about the way you talk. Baby, come away from me. I mash up so much that you never come walk. So don't take your time on me. She had a boy like me before. She says I talk about the other two. She knows that I'm still that nigga chilling on the block. I'm still that nigga chilling on the block. She said there's nothing she would do for me.
Hello, this is Marco, and you're listening to Astro Talk with Stefan Don on CITR
1.9.
Pride Vancouver Society presents Liberacion, the first LGBTQ Philippine-X Pride art celebration, on Saturday, June 16th at XY Lounge, featuring performances by Kimortal, Naomi King, Romeo Reyes, Well, Jade Soul, and Mevian Hauser, and works by Politik, Mildred Grace German, Clar Pond, Jose Luis Reyes, Cesarina Bravo Tabopo, and These Bodies Between Us. Check out Pinoy Pride on Facebook for more information.
You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 with Marco and Sugar.
Time for some action. I got to be the main attraction. Blowing up like Tony Braxton. Pick my girls up to check the party uptown. I leave my shorty home because I'm trying to buy at the sports bar. Honey's everywhere and looking mink. What's up, star? Let's get a drink. What's up, star?
Talking to our star, the sun. What's up, star? I guess what's up is this Parker Solar Probe is up there investigating you. So welcome back, and now we're going to close out the show, talk a bit more astronomy, or maybe a lot more astronomy. So here we go. What are we going to talk about? There's always this story about what is the Hubble constant, kind of yawner, isn't it? All they say, well, what's the Hubble constant? And they keep disagreeing with each other. Okay, here's another one. Is the universe curved? Not so fast. This is from Live Science a day ago. So again, the article is the universe curved? Not so fast. The shape of the universe is one of the most important questions in cosmology, with far-reaching implications up to including the ultimate fate of the cosmos. For decades, we've been measuring our universe to be geometrically flat, but a team of cosmologists are now reporting that our latest measurements actually prefer something rounder. But there's far more to the story than a simple measurement. Know the curves. The surface of the Earth is curved. We know this. And parallel lines don't always stay parallel on the Earth. Lines of longitude intersect the North and South Pole, something that can never happen on a flat plane. And if you were to draw a triangle connecting three cities on Earth, you would find that the angles inside the triangle add up to more than 180 degrees. Again, good luck doing that on a flat plane. Astronomers are very curious about the ultimate curvature of the universe. How do parallel lines and triangles behave on the very largest scales? They care because the shape of the universe is ultimately connected to its fate. Einstein's general relativity, which we use to understand the cosmos, tells us that the contents of space-time affects its shape, and the shape tells the contents how to move. To test the geometry of space-time, we need to look at all sorts of distant sources and determine if the light from these sources has undergone any major deviation in its path to us. This article is starting to get serious. I skipped a paragraph And as I go down, there's more and more stuff that it's just complicated. So, and what they're probably going to do at the end of this story, going to say, they're saying, is the universe closed? Well, we don't know. We're just trying to find that out. So I'm going to skip this article because it was just getting crazy. It's a big, long article, and I'll just do something else. Like, why not talk about a alien planet spotted around a white dwarf? This is a cosmic first. So before they were theorizing, could an alien planet exist around a white dwarf? It seems they found it. So this is on Live Science. It says, evidence of an alien planet spotted around a white dwarf, a cosmic first, by Mike Wall a day ago on livescience.com. Dead stars can have planets too. For the first time, astronomers have spotted evidence of an exoplanet circling a super-dense stellar corp known as a white dwarf, a new study reports. So says lead author Boris Gensicki from the University of Warwick in England, and quote, this discovery is a major progress because over the past two decades, we had growing evidence that planetary systems survive into the white dwarf stage, end quote. Here's another quote. We've seen a lot of asteroids, comets, and other smaller planetary objects hitting white dwarfs, and explaining these events requires larger planet mass bodies farther out, having evidence for an actual planet that itself was scattered in is an important step. Okay, so now they found a white dwarf with a planet around it. The mass majority of stars in the Milky Way, including the Sun, will end up as white dwarfs. When these stars finish burning their nuclear fuel, they'll bloat up as enormous red giants and eventually collapse down into white dwarfs, which pack about one solar mass into a sphere the size of Earth. The main exception is really big stars, which go supernova. They have to be 8 times the mass of the Sun, though. So Gensicki and his colleagues studied a white dwarf called WDJ0914+1914, which is 2,400 light years from Earth, in data collected by the Sloan Digital Survey. In the data, the researchers detected the emission of hydrogen, sulfur, and oxygen coming from the white dwarf. That's an odd combination of gases for a white dwarf system, so the team trained the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope in Chile on WDJ0914+194. The VLT observation confirmed the presence of all three elements and suggested that the emissions are coming from a ring of gas around the white dwarf. So says Gensicki again, at first we thought this was a binary star with an accretion disk formed from mass flowing between the two stars. However, our observations show that it is a single white dwarf with a disk around it, roughly 10 times the size of our Sun, made solely of hydrogen, oxygen, and sulfur. Such a system has never been seen before, and it was immediately clear to me that this was a unique star, end quote. So again, it wasn't a direct observation. It's by observing other things and making a summation saying, okay, because this exists, then this exists. So they found a white dwarf. So the composition of this disk is similar, with a planet around it, that is. The composition of this disk is similar to that in our solar system's ice giants, Neptune and Uranus, the researcher said. So it seems that a Neptune-like world, one about 4 times wider than the star itself, is circling the white dwarf once every 10 Earth days. Interesting stuff, but how does that get us to Mars? I don't know. So, what can I finish off with that's very cool? Okay, so here's a nice page. Space.com says, amazing moon photos from NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter launched to the moon on June 18, 2009, on a mission to map Earth's natural satellite and look for resources that could be valuable for future human missions to the moon. The orbiter uses 7 instruments to examine the lunar surface and its radiation environment. Among the probe's notable achievements is finding extensive evidence of water ice on the moon's surface. See photos from NASA's prolific lunar orbiter here. So if you want to see some nice photos of the moon, you can go to space.com. The article is called Amazing Moon Photos from NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter from June 18th, 2019. So, oh, this is a gorgeous picture. It shows the top of the moon, and then it shows Earthrise. February 1st, 2014, shows a colorized view of Earth from the moon. So the Earth is rising. It's beautiful above the rise. Really nice. Sunlight on the lunar poles. Maps of the lunar poles show how much sunlight specific regions receive in a lunar year. White areas have constant sunlight, while black areas are in permanent shadows. So this just makes me recall that under the lip of some of the craters of the moon, it's probably one of the coldest places in our solar system. No sunlight ever reaches there, so it's really, really cold. It's in constant, perpetual darkness. So here's one, lunar stretch marks. The LRO captured this image of a surface feature called a graben, or a type of trench that formed as the surface expanded. This image was taken near the Mare Frigoris region. So I guess when people started looking at Mars hundreds of years ago on the moon, when they saw these stretch marks canals, they say, ha, there's life in them dar hills. Okay, here's a strange area. The crater Eithoven, not Beethoven or Einstein, but Eithoven, is near the aptly named Eithoven cold spot anomaly. I love that word, anomaly. The LRO's camera captured an overhead nighttime view of the strange spot where the temperature is about 45 degrees Fahrenheit or 7 degrees Celsius. Kind of cold. So imagine in the future, 50 years, 100 years from now, we've populated parts of the solar system and we got missions all over the place, and then the captain asks the person, what ensign, what do you see? And he says, see, I see an anomaly. So that's a nice word, anomaly. What are you seeing? An anomaly. But what kind of anomaly? Anomaly kind of anomaly. So isn't that nice? We have anomalies. Okay, here's a Chalandi crater, a classic bowl-shaped lunar crater known as Chalandi crater in the Sinus Medii. This image shows the crater ejecta blanket and part of its lumpy crater pocked floor. So I think it was 20 years ago, I recall, something like 20 years ago, I was talking to an amateur astronomer, and he says, for the past year, he's been looking at the moon, studying the moon, and he said it was so fascinating. So you can imagine just a lump of rock called the moon is just so fascinating. And there's so many more fascinating things in astronomy. Now, here's a cool thing. It looks like a shield or a crest. It's called Wargo Crater. So Wargo Crater sounds like an Australian name. An impact crater on the northwest region of Jewel T. Crater on the side of the moon is named for NASA's former chief exploration scientist Michael Wargo. Wargo made many contributions to exploration science in his 20-year career with NASA. And here's rediscovering